Hey guys, and welcome to episode 178 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now in this episode, I interviewed licensed clinical psychologist Dr. Chad Brandt. Chad works at the Houston OCD program in the States, and I wanted to interview someone at that clinic for a while, so it was good to get him on and talk about all things OCD treatment. Now, the Houston OCD program have recently adopted the Bergen four-day format, which is four sort of 10, 12-hour days of intensive therapy. So it's kind of doing roughly like 7 months of 1 hour a week therapy in 4 days. Now, I had the guys from Bergen on a month or so ago, so definitely check out that episode. But in this, talking with Chad about his experience of being a therapist on that four-day format, we go into that. It's really interesting. We unpack the treatment a bit more of the details, what he's learned from it, his experience of that treatment. It was really interesting to hear that. And in this episode, he talks a lot about fear as well, which I found really interesting, and ways of generally looking at kind of overcoming fear, not necessarily overcoming it, learning to live your life in spite of it. And then obviously all the general questions towards the end. So it was a really interesting chat. I hope you enjoy it. And if the podcast has been helping you, I'd appreciate it if you could leave a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast, as it helps me reach more people. So thank you very much. And without further ado, here is Chad. On the podcast today, I have Dr. Chad Brandt. Chad is a licensed clinical psychologist with expertise in treating anxiety-based disorders. He currently works at the Houston OCD program. Welcome to the show, Chad.
Hey, Stu. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for coming on.
Absolutely.
Cool. So, as you know, I always get people's, whether it's an OCD story or in this case, well, if you have one, please feel free to share. If not, it'd be good to know why you treat OCD and your kind of therapy story.
Yes, yes. I have a lifelong anxiety story, but I can tell you my therapy story as a part of it. I am just a people person, and I just love helping people. I've always wanted to help. I took a psychology class in high school, and I loved it. And when I started my undergrad at Florida State, that's just what I wanted to do. I took every psychology class at Florida State. I actually had to take oceanography my senior year because I ran out of psychology classes to take. And I worked in a few labs on the Florida State campus, always with a focus on anxiety. I just love anxiety. Everybody has it. I have a lot of it. And it's so much fun to work with, and people can get so much better so quickly. Yeah. So I was always drawn into anxiety. I went straight from my undergrad into my PhD, and I really focused on like communities that weren't getting the help that they needed. So I spent most of my time in community health clinics, working with people with chronic health conditions and anxiety, primarily anxiety in all sorts of ways. Yeah. And I thought for a long time the way I could do the most good was with research. So I have a lot of publications, and I got grant funding through the National Institute of Mental Health and all that stuff. And it was my wife one day, right as I was about to finish school, who said, you know, the days that you write a lot, you come home and you're just burnt out and you're a big grump. And the days that you see clients, you're just so energetic and you won't stop talking. And so I had to take a step back and take that feedback in and say, okay, well, maybe that the way I can do the good is by really doing my clinical work and helping people. Yeah. So I made a big shift, and I did my internship at the Baylor College of Medicine and affiliated with the Houston VA, and saw my first real series of OCD clients along with other anxiety. Just fell in love, just love it. And I did my postdoc, and I'm now a licensed psychologist at the Houston OCD program. And I do full-time clinical work now, and we'll see the full spectrum of care here. So I'll see children as young as 5 through any age of adulthood. And we'll do kind of regular, quote unquote, outpatient therapy. We have an intensive outpatient program 5 days a week, and we have one of the few residential OCD programs in the country. So I've been here for a few years doing this. And then this year, we're just starting the Bergen 4-day program, intensive program for OCD. And that's mostly what I'm excited to talk about today.
Nice. Well, thank you for sharing again into detail. And it's great that your wife picked up on your energy.
she picks up on many things.
yeah, I bet.
Okay, cool. So as you said, you know, we had the guys from Bergen on the podcast a few, yes. I don't know how long, maybe a couple of months ago now. It was great to hear all about that. And I know at the time, I think the next week they were flying out to you guys,
yes.
I guess, to work with you on it and then run the first program. So how did that go?
Yes, the first program was just fantastic. We've done a couple now. This is June of 2019, and we're just starting to ramp it up into really every week. But the program has just been fantastic. It is, the Norwegians would say when we did all the trainings in the early part of the year, they would say it's exactly the same, but it's completely different. And I never had any idea what that meant. And I would get so frustrated hearing that. But when you get in there and see it, it is the same. Exposures are still our main method of change, our main mechanism of change. I've had a few people reach out to me and say, I can't wait to do the Bergen treatment because I've done so many exposures and I'm just tired of exposures. And I have to let them down and say, well, we still have to do them for Bergen, but the way we do them is very different. So the end of the first group, I called my wife on the way home after the first group and I just told her, this is what I have to do. This just changed me personally. It certainly changed me professionally. And it's just what I do now. It's what I do with my, outpatients to the degree that I'm able, certainly the groups, and it's just so exciting to be a part of it.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's awesome to hear. And what is it about if it is possible to kind of capture why for you personally, why it's so special compared to say the work you've been doing previously?
Yes, which was also special, and I don't want to say it wasn't.
Poor choice. My word.
I just love my job all the time. I just love it more now, if that's possible. I think there's a few foundational building blocks that are a little different here without explaining too much about it. I just think that people with OCD are normal. I think we get this message that if you have OCD, you're broken, or your brain is broken, or something is broken, and you just have to... you're just different and you have to be different forever. And we have to manage that difference forever. And I just really don't think that that's true. And I think that's one foundation of this is you're normal. If you have OCD, you are normal and we need to help you to be normal. It's like having a computer. And if you have a computer that's normal and working and it gets a virus, it doesn't matter if the computer has the virus for a day or a month or 10 years. You just need to run a good antivirus program and you get rid of the virus and you have a working computer again. The problem was never the computer. So I'll think about everybody in that way now, which I think is different, certainly, than the message we get sometimes. So I think that's one building block that's a little bit different that I can talk about some. And the second thing that I can share a lot about, if you'd like, is the way we're doing our exposures here is a little different. It's still exposure therapy. We're still touching the dirty things or what have you. But the way that we're doing them is different. Could I give you a story to kind of illustrate?
Please. The floor is yours.
Yes. Let me see. Well, when I was in high school, I joined the water polo team at my high school. And I was just, the team was terrible. The coach was like the wrestling coach. Like, we had no clue what we were doing. And they made me the goalie because I was the only one that wasn't on swim team. So I didn't know what I was doing. They didn't know what they were doing. But I was really motivated. I really wanted to be good. And I'd go to practice and I'd listen to my coach and I'd do everything he said. And I'd take all the practice shots from the other guys. And I did that for a couple weeks, like half of the season. And a good water polo goalie blocks about half of the shots that come at him. And I was blocking about 10%, which is about the rate of the ones that hit you in the face, right? Like, I was just so bad. And I was getting so frustrated. So I would tell my buddies to stay late after practice and take extra shots on me. And I would start going to the gym and throwing weights around. And it just, the whole season went by and I still, even with that work, was only blocking like 10% of shots. So I went to a water polo camp like that summer after the season ended, and there was a real kind of water polo goalie coach that was there, and he watched me take like 3 shots and he pulled me out of the pool and he said, come over here with me and you and I are going to work on these 3 little things. And we're just going to work on these today. We're not taking any shots, but you're not doing it as efficiently as you can. So a whole day he spent with me really working on these three or four little techniques and getting them right. Went home, practiced again. The next day I came in and he said, get into the pool and see how it goes. And I blocked about 40% of shots that day. And the point of that story isn't necessarily to talk about my mediocre water polo career. The point would be, I think that's what happens with OCD so much of the time. Everybody knows to do exposure therapy, whether they've been in therapy or not. Everybody's had a parent or a friend say, go face your fear. But it's the way that we're doing it that sometimes isn't right. And people will get disheartened or think that they're broken or they can't do it. When really you just need somebody to show you the right way and be with you every step. And once you get it, and once you get that feeling, you don't need me anymore. You can go and do it. You've got the feeling, you can go and get it on your own. Does that kind of make sense?
It does. Yeah.
So that's like another kind of principle that we'll work with is, how are we doing this and can we really do it right? Go get all the anxiety.
Yeah. No, I like that there. Thanks for explaining. And I guess what I should have asked you initially is, for those that haven't heard the Bergen method or format, what is it? I guess that's my mistake.
Yes. The Bergen treatment program. So it's a 4-day intensive treatment program for OCD that was developed in the city of Bergen, which is in Norway. They've been doing it in Norway for about 10 years. They've run about 2,000 people through the Bergen Training Clinic. It's now national law in Norway that every citizen has to be within a certain distance of a Bergen OCD clinic to make sure you have good coverage. And what they've found in the last 10 years and 2,000 patients is about 70% of people right after the treatment program and a month after the treatment program will say that they have little to no symptoms of OCD. And what they'll find is 99% of those people will maintain those gains 6 months, 1 year, and 4 years afterwards with no therapy.
No, that's really good to hear. And yeah, what impressed me about the study they did was it like a year on or 3 years on, like there was almost no change?
Yes, it ended up being 4 in the most recent one. Yeah. No change, essentially no change after 4 years, which is just astounding. Yeah. The first group that we did here, I remember being so hesitant. I went into it and we did hours of training. I've done so many hours of training with this. And I sat in the first group and said, this can't really be that different. I'm just going to kind of see the same thing. And it just was. It just was. And the first group, which happened in April, I think, of this year, they're just doing fantastic. It's just great.
No, that's great to hear. And obviously, I guess you can't share everything, but what is it specifically do you feel that's like so different to doing even like intensive ERP, where it's, say, 5 days, well, not 5 days, but, sessions every day for like 3 weeks or whatever, compared to, say, the intensive 10-hour, 4 days that you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what is uniquely different about that?
I think there's a few things. I think we assume everybody's normal is one that's really important for people. I think really to be with them every second of the day and making the right choices constantly before we hand off the reins is good. And then I think we'll think about anxiety a little bit differently too, or exposures a little differently. So if I could tell you another story, Stu. if you were to have cancer, if you were to have a real bad stage 4 or something cancer, and you came in to see me as your cancer doctor, and I said, Stu, I have two treatments here for you. One is 100% certain to cure your cancer, but it has these horrible side effects, and you'll throw up and you'll lose your hair. It'll be like chemo. And I've got this other medicine, and this one is 60% likely to cure your cancer, but it tastes like strawberries and it's quite pleasant. Which medicine would you take?
Yeah, the first one.
Right, you would take the first one. Everybody would take the first one. And we would take the first one, and we wouldn't ask any questions about the side effects. And we really wouldn't care about the side effects. Why would we? We would only care about, is the tumor shrinking? right? Are we doing the right thing to beat your OCD? Which might be different than, are we doing the right thing to give you anxiety? Because the anxiety is kind of a side effect. More so than necessarily the thing we have to completely focus on and build everything around. I feel anxiety all the time, not related to anything in particular, and that doesn't help or hurt unless I'm using it the right way.
Yeah,
you know, really angling into the OCD. And what we'll say to people a lot of times too, I'd rather people do a small exposure and really do it right, really do it well, than do a big one and kind of lose control. Let the OCD have a portion of it, if you will. And people usually get relaxed when I say that, and then I'll say something like, and it would make sense if we could do a small exposure right, then we could do a big exposure right, and people get nervous again. And that's okay, because we're going to use the nerves in treatment. But I think it's a combination of how we're looking at people, how we're looking at patients, how we're looking at exposures, and really what it is that we're angling towards with our chemo, if I could carry the metaphor there. I think those are some of the really big differences that I like to focus on anyway.
Yeah. No, thanks for sharing. And I have heard it before. People said, I can remember one story in particular I got where the person said that they're doing incredibly better in terms of OCD. And he kind of, one of the key factors to his recovery, he said, was the therapist believed he could get better in the sense of like really better, not just like managing it. Do you think that is a vital thing for the therapist or clinician to be like, you're not just going to be able to, this is something you have to grin and bear for the rest of your life. You can truly.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Why not? Why not? Yeah. Why not? There's MD Anderson Cancer Center. It's a big cancer center in Houston that's on the cutting edge. And if they said, you guys, we cured 80% of liver cancer, we're going to leave the rest of the 20%. We're done. We're done at 80. Nobody would accept that, right? And for some reason, sometimes I think we all want to accept that with OCD, that I'll just let 20% of the cancer live in me and it's fine. I can manage around it. And you're just giving this portion of your life to this thing that you don't have to give it to anymore. And I really do think people are normal and can get better. Maybe that's reassurance and maybe it doesn't matter, because it's important for people to believe that they can get better. And again, they don't have to get the reassurance from me. You know, there's data on the internet that indicates as much. So, yeah.
No, thank you. Thank you for explaining. Yeah. Okay. So a little bit more than on the details. So with doing exposures, are you doing it as a group? Is it still somewhat sort of group therapy, or is it still very much individualized one-to-one?
That's a good question. And thank you for bringing me back around to it, because I missed that part when I explained about it. So the Bergen 4-day program is kind of a group/individual program. So normally there's 3 to 6 patients and 3 to 6 therapists. So it's a 1-to-1 therapist to patient ratio. We all come together as a group on the first day and really just do psychoeducation. What is OCD? What's going on? You're normal. How are we going to fix your normalcy so you're more normal? Really the first day, if people are nervous to call me or email me or anything, the first day there are no exposures. We all just learn and kind of get on the same page. And then the second day we come together, we review what we learned, and then everybody will split up and go the one-on-one therapist patient ratio. Some stay in the clinic and do exposures. Some go out into the community. That's the nice thing about having the whole day is you can really go where the OCD lives and kill it. And for right now, at the time of this recording anyway, we're only seeing people in Houston. And that's because what we're finding is we have to be in people's homes most of the time. Because OCD loves to live there. It's the safe place where it gets to grow. And if we were to pull somebody from Dallas or California or anything, we just might not be able to get out there and get it. So then we get the time one-on-one to go out and do that. And then we'll come together for lunch normally, talk about it. Everybody will give each other some support. We'll make a lot of jokes. We'll have a lot of fun. And then we'll go back to it. and that'll be the second and third day. And sometimes if it's appropriate, patients might pair up and go together with the therapist. Sometimes if a patient is doing really well and they say, well, the scariest thing for me now would be for me to go do this on my own without you, I will say, fantastic, I will see you later. Go do it. Come on back when you're done. So they will go out on their own if it's appropriate. But you really just get flexibility. Everybody's on their own for most of it. And then we come together on the last day, kind of review what we learned, give them some materials, and then really let them go.
Yeah.
And they'll come back for some check-ins that are very short, but a few patients might need a short little primer to come in a time or two. But so far, what the Norwegians found, it, what we're finding so far in Houston is most people don't need it. They leave and they kind of don't come back, which is great.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear, and thank you for explaining. And I can see how, so in the UK, I run a camp for people with OCD, and it's not, I say it's therapeutic, but it's not therapy. There's no, we do a tiny bit of exposures, but it's not trying to treat people effectively. It's, for me, it's the belief of creating connection with other people with OCD, sharing your story, being heard for maybe the first time in your life, and doing some other activities. And the last two years I've run it, like, the connections people get are just incredible, and they become their own permanent support group going forward. And the thing, one of the elements I think that's magical about it is, for 3 days you're only with people with OCD. It's this intense pressure cooker. And there's something very healing about that. And that's similar to what you guys are doing with the Bergen method. It's,
yes,
you can't get away from OCD, but in a good way.
Yes. Yes. And you just get to be yourself and be open and be normal with other people. And it's so interesting that you say that, because always on the first day, the little group will kind of wait together in the waiting room while we prepare. And they're just nervous and they're not really talking. And then the second morning, they will all talk because they know each other. And the conversation will always be, here are the things I'm not going to do. Always. Here are the things I will do, things I won't do, things I have done and haven't done. And then by the end of the second day, and even definitely the end of the third day, it turns into almost a friendly competition of, here are the things that I did do, and here are the things I never thought I could do, and I did them by 10 a.m. and then I kept going. And that's great. And every group we've done so far, all the members have exchanged phone numbers if they wanted to, which we don't ask them to, and we would never ask anybody to do, but all the participants have wanted to, because I think they get that bonding experience of really going through a boot camp together. And I think that's just so impactful.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think, like you said, being around for us 4 days or 3 days, being around just people with OCD, it really hammers home that normalcy, that I am normal. Here's seven other people that experience exactly the same thing.
Yes. It's, it's so interesting. The early days of OCD therapy, they would do the thought stop therapy in the 70s, where you'd like get to put a rubber band around your wrist and snap it when you had a bad thought or shock yourself or something. And that really didn't work. and it didn't take long for researchers to say, well, we need to ask the question, like, how many people actually have some of these terrible thoughts? Like, am I a pedophile? Did I hit somebody with my car? Is this dirty or whatever? Right. And the studies now that you'll read about this will say, 90% of people have these thoughts and the other 10% lie about them. It's normal. It's a normal process. And to go through life thinking that I'm not normal because I have a thought that everybody has is just doesn't work. It just doesn't make sense in that way. And I think you're right. When you get together and you see everybody having it, it's like, oh, maybe I can do this. Maybe this is okay. Maybe I can get through it.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah, I completely agree. Okay, then, so obviously it's primarily exposure based.
Yes.
I'm sure there's obviously many elements to it, but in terms of the core therapy, it's exposure. Mm-hmm. But as I asked you at the start, you've trained in ACT a bit, acceptance commitment therapy. And is that brought into the Bergen method at all, any of the principles?
Yes, it's a good question. And I would say, to some degree, it almost doesn't matter where it comes from because it works. but to answer your question, there's elements of ACT. There's certainly CBT models in there, and it's exposure based, and you've got elements of you know, metacognitive therapy, and there's values work, and it's all tied in together. And I think the really nice thing about having somebody for 4 days in a group, yes, but really in a one-on-one format for a lot of it, yeah, is you really get to use all the language, all your therapy tools, and really just in the moment kind of see what works on somebody. And somebody might really be doing it for their family, and that's their value system. And somebody else might not want to walk through the doorways because they're protecting somebody else. Or there's another value about the life they want to leave outside of their family, and you get to touch on that and work on that. And if it's some other kind of core belief about yourself that I'm broken or I can't or something, you can take another approach and go at it. But you lose that when you break everything into 45-minute sessions. You know, one of the Norwegian team will say weekly therapy is like telling a joke in 5 installments. It just wouldn't land by the time you had your 5th installment. So let's just put it all together. So you get to use all of it and really put together a nice puzzle for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I completely relate that when you have more of that time, you can adjust on the fly and say various things, do different tools and techniques. Yeah, that's what I like about the camp. We try and be flexible like that as well. And I want to say I'm not plugging the camp here. It's just it helps me understand it's my only experience.
Please plug it. Yeah. Yes. Well, it makes so much sense, and you get to see it, and we all know it. It's why we do group therapies and things. So it should make sense. We should all do it.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So, no, thank you for that. Mike, you kind of answered it there. One of my questions was, more and more I notice people with OCD have a lot of, as I guess a lot of humans, but they have a lot of, I don't want to say self-hatred, but they struggle with self-love sometimes and self-acceptance. And it could be the guilt of having these taboo or horrible thoughts, or it could just be past trauma as well that's playing in. And you did mention that you kind of work on the fly if you need to work on some of that, but is it addressed naturally in the program, or do you do it individually as and when?
Yeah, it's a good question. We will say there's a lot of data on this. That's really a strength of the Norwegian team, is they've collected and published some fantastic data that everyone can Google right now if they want it, after they listen. and what they find is that most people will come into the program with depression and or another anxiety disorder, certainly some trauma, shame, self-hatred, substance use, if it's not active and interfering in treatment. They'll come in with so many different things, and it doesn't matter. The treatment is just as effective for somebody who only has OCD as it is for somebody who has OCD and depression and poor self-worth and a lot of worry about other stuff. And we actually find the opposite. We actually find that people are taking the skills that we're using, and their OCD is disappearing, and then their anxieties, other anxieties or depression, are decreasing. And I think it's the skills that work with OCD treatment that are just applicable to so much, that you can really see great gains outside of OCD because of it. We do tell people, set everything aside and just work on your OCD. And it's kind of amazing when you only work on your OCD, how the load lightens for everything else too. So to answer your question, usually no, we don't directly address other things unless we really have to, but usually no, and they still get better.
Yeah. It's kind of almost that like lead domino effect. If you just hit the key domino, everything else topples in place.
Yes, it is. And I think OCD is so interesting because there's so much shame and the thoughts are so taboo. And then you've got every one of my patients ever can come into my office and say, like, I know this is silly. I know AIDS can't live on a water bottle. I have been on the CDC website for hours, and I know it doesn't work that way. And I can't tell anybody else because I know it's silly, but it just feels too real. And then they struggle in silence with just so many aspects of it.
Yeah.
And then again, I think to come in and normalize it and work with it and have some fun with OCD is really freeing in a lot of ways.
No, thank you. And general question then around ERP. Let's say someone listening is about to start exposure therapy. What kind of words of wisdom do you have for them?
Yes, yes, that is a good question. It depends. Are they starting it with me in the Bergen program, or are they starting it somewhere else?
let's say it's just weekly.
Weekly. They're somewhere else. They're not with me. Good. Right. The number one thing I can say, and there's a lot of data from us and from others about this, is to really, really go for it. Really kind of let go and go for it. And people will tell me sometimes for my Bergen work or for my outpatient work or my residential work, they'll come in and say, I'm really afraid that this won't work. And I'll tell people usually that's fantastic. I really want you to put yourself in a position where you know it won't work and really, really take the risk. Because if you come in and you give me 80% and you hold on to 20 and you don't tell us about this and you won't do that, then I can promise you, you won't get better. Because you're just giving the cancer a place to live. So really, you can do it. You're a normal person. Let go. Go take your life back.
Love it. Thank you. And this next question kind of actually links to, I guess it links to all kind of therapy as people start to get better, but I guess especially with Bergen, which is when someone starts to reduce the compulsion. So obviously with the Bergen method, we're saying 70% of people at the end of that should have dramatically reduced them, which means they've now got a lot of time back, and I guess mental energy if they're mental compulsions. So is that something you address in the Bergen method of like, kind of what you're going to do with your time now sort of thing?
Yes. Yes. The last day is, there are no exposures in the last day unless one were to happen to pop up somewhere, but it's a lot about, just planning what you're going to do with your time. And it's been another consistent theme in every kind of going away. I'd call it a ceremony, kind of the final session that we have, the final group piece that we have for all the 4-day groups. Everyone cries. That's one piece of it. and it's at least one person in every group will say, I'm so sad because I've wasted so much time. And at the same time, I'm so happy because I know I can get it back. And so many times for these people, just spending 10 minutes saying, here are all the things I want to do. Here are all the things I've wanted to do with my kids for the last 5 years that I haven't done, is just so, exhilarating. Just so exhilarating to have that space and time back. So it's absolutely something that people find. And it's one of those things that we can choose to look at as a negative and really get kind of caught in the vortex again and get sucked back into the hole of thinking about it and beating ourselves up about it. Or it's something that we can use and say, I'm going to really use all this time to continue to crush my OCD where it tries to pop up and go live that valued life, to use my ACT terminology, in a way that I want. So it's a good question. And yes, it does come up a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, no, thank you for that. And yeah, and then another way, whenever I've heard people say this, it's also, as you alluded to there, the guilt and the shame of I've lost all this time.
Yes.
Does that need special attention, that particular, like, whether it's letting go of those emotions, working through those emotions, or...
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. And I think there's some things we need to work on and some things that it doesn't make sense to work on. And we'll tell people early on, there's a lot of ways into OCD. You know, some people have family members with it, some people don't. Some people develop it very young, some people develop it old, some people develop it very quickly, like a trauma or when they have a child. Some people develop it slowly, and it doesn't matter as treatment is concerned. There's all these different ways in, but there's only one way out. And the one way out is to focus on you right now and you moving forward. And if we're spending a lot of time stuck in the past, well, we're not going to move forward. So it is addressed and people will bring it up, and people are usually find themselves having the tools to move forward, you know, anyway, and see it as something that they're going to run with instead of, you know, an anchor that's going to hold them back.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, cool. So advice for living with uncertainty.
Yeah.
General question, but.
It's so interesting. I love the uncertainty talk because The way I was taught OCD in my graduate program is like it's a fear of uncertainty. And that's interesting because it is. How do I know that there's not AIDS on this water bottle, to kind of call back to my earlier example? But people with OCD will live with uncertainty in so many other ways. You know, I really that's care funny. About that water bottle and the contamination, but I'm at work and I'm not thinking that a meteor could have hit my house. Or, you know, in Houston, Texas, an example I'll give is buying volcano insurance. You know, this is just sand. There is no volcano. But what if there was and it swallowed your house? We should go buy it right now. As a matter of fact, I'm starting a company, just small investment. Well, anyway, so I think it's something that we can use. It's an opportunity. And the OCD will choose not to grab onto it in some parts. And that's great. We'll just appreciate that it's not trying to pop up. And when it does try to pop up with somewhere, that's really a good opportunity to show the OCD who's boss, you know, to really take the jump and move forward.
Yeah.
Show yourself that you can do it. And I think when we look at it as an opportunity instead of a prison or a law, you know, that we have to live by, it frees up a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. My next question is, I can imagine what you're going to say, so I'll ask it, which is, has your view of treatment changed over the last 2 years? And if so,
maybe a bit. How? Yes, so much. In the last 2 months, in the last 2 days. Yes. And how? I think there's a few things, and I can just run through them as I think about them. One is that you're normal. I'm normal. People with OCD are normal. People with anxiety are normal. We're all humans that are caught in a loop that we can break and we can get out of. And I think one thing for me, a personal lesson that I've taken from being part of this approach is that there are so many traps that OCD or anxiety will set for us. And when you learn to see all of the traps, when you can take a step back and see the whole chessboard instead of just being the pawn being chased around, you can really take control and you can really run the game. And every little place in my life now where anxiety pops up, I'm able to notice it and feel it and say, oh, good, there it is. Let's chase it down. You know, and I'm going to go do something now instead of kind of getting stuck in the hamster wheel that we all get stuck in sometimes.
Yeah.
I could keep going, but I feel like those are the big things for me personally that I've taken from this.
Yeah. No, I love it. And I like the attitude, the mindset of kind of let's chase it down.
Yes. Yes. And I think OCD treatment can be so passive sometimes. And this is another thing that it'll just be, we're going to lean back and we're going to wait for the OCD to hit. And you're just going to kind of fend it off. I'm making karate chop blocking motions now for the podcast, which nobody can see, but we're just kind of waiting and fighting it away when it comes to us. But we can really take control and go out of our way to attack the OCD when it doesn't want us to. And that is a paradigm shift for a lot of people too. You can go take control of your life. Life doesn't happen to you. You happen to it. So let's go make it happen.
Yeah.
And that's a really big one that I think people like.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool. So what is one thing you notice from your clients that recover much quicker?
Oh, they just jump with me. They're just going to go for it. Mm. Absolutely. That's an easy question. The longer we talk, the longer we debate, the longer we throw up kind of the roadblocks and have to tear them down. You know, the longer OCD gets to sit there and build up more roadblocks behind itself. You know, sometimes we just have to let go and jump. Could I tell you one more story?
Yeah, please.
Just that I'll give sometimes. And it's another one about me. When I was a kid, maybe 8 or 10, I grew up in Orlando, Florida, and there was an Olympic diving center near my house. And my buddies and I decided we wanted to go jump off the high dive. So our parents said it was okay, and the lifeguard that was there said it was okay. So we all start climbing the ladder. And I remember thinking to myself at the time, I am so scared. This is really scary. And I need a plan. I need to come up with a plan so that this isn't scary anymore. And the plan I came up with was that I was going to get to the top of the 10-meter board, and I was going to walk to the edge, and I was just going to look over the edge until I wasn't scared anymore. And as soon as I wasn't scared, then I would jump, and it would be a lot of fun. And you can probably guess what happened. I stood at the edge of the board, which for what felt like a year, and I walked back down. I just walked back down the stairs because I was waiting for it to not be scary, and it was always going to be scary. And if I had a time machine and I could go back and tell myself what to do differently, I would just tell myself, you need to just run the second you hit the top of the board, just run and jump off the edge, because you can be scared for the 3 seconds it takes you to get off, or you can be scared for the hour where you're standing there. And why would you choose to torture yourself? Just go and do it. Just go and have some fun. Yeah. So that's the indicator. Can we run? Can we run and jump? Can we go for it? And we don't have to do that. And again, we don't have to do that with the really big things. As far as I'm concerned, I don't need people to stick their head in a toilet if they have a contamination concern. It's not a useful skill. I think we fall in the trap sometimes of finding the neat exposure or the one that'll really feel terrible. And it's like doing chemo based on what's going to give you the most side effects instead of what's going to kill the cancer, right? We don't need to put our head in the toilet, but we do need to find the thing that'll bug the OCD, and we do need to jump in and do it. That could be a sink candle, I don't care, but it's got to be, we need to roll, we need to go and do it.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's very relevant for my own life. I won't go into detail at the minute, but yeah, I'll take that advice on board.
And I don't want to dunk my head in the toilet with you, Stu. I really don't. I'll do it if I have to, but
yeah. No, well, I was thinking more the diving board bit.
Okay. Well, yeah, that one too. Haven't been on a high dive, but if I do, it would ruin the story, so I probably won't.
You should YouTube it and share it. Everyone's going to hold you accountable now to that. So.
Yes, please do. Please send me an email and make me do that. Not make me. I'll choose to do it, but I'd appreciate the motivation.
Encouragement, yeah. Cool. So, again, general question, but let's say someone's come up to you, let's say it's the ISDF conference, and they just say, like, what's one bit of advice for me? I have OCD.
From me?
I guess other than get treatment.
Yes, get treatment would be one. You know what I would say now, going through the Bergen treatment, and it's in a few countries, developed in Norway, it's in Iceland and Sweden and Finland. We will be the international training center in Houston. So we're the first American clinic to do it, and we've got clinics coming in from Malaysia and Brazil soon, and we'll do other American clinics soon. So I think what I would leave people with, or what I would tell somebody at IOCDF is, you know, if you've been living with OCD for a long time, we have a new way to treat it. And this treatment is really changing people's lives. So you can come and give it a shot.
Cool. No, thank you for that. Yes. And if you could pick up the phone and call your 20-year-old self, what would you tell him?
Oh, golly, jump, man. You don't need to spend 9 years in school thinking that you have to do research. I think for me, I spent so much time as a human being thinking, just thinking, trying to make sure I knew all the angles about my steps before they were the right steps, and trying to pick the steps that moved me forward but helped me stay comfortable. You know, and in that way, I was pushing my life forward, but I was definitely like lugging this anvil of anxiety around with me, and I didn't need it. It was slowing me down.
Yeah.
And I could have moved through life a lot faster and had a lot more fun had I just let the anvil go and just started to go for it. I don't know how it would have worked out. Would have been faster.
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay, and you've got a billboard in Houston. What do you want written on that billboard for everyone to see?
Oh, please come to the Houston OCD program now. We're actually offering scholarships. So our first number of patients in Houston that call the clinic get the treatment for free. We've got fantastic donors in the States and in Norway. So right now we're offering this for free for a little while.
That's for people in Houston, though, right?
Only in Houston right now. Yes, the Houston area. Cool. For those of you that know Houston, it's like a 60-mile catchment area. It's a big city, but it's, yes, the city of Houston. And if you're in Houston, you can call, you can go to our website, HoustonOCDProgram.org, and there's a link for the Bergen Forte treatment and a short survey that you fill out online for accessibility. And if you basically have OCD and want treatment, there's a few interviews you'd have to do with me or someone else here. But if you're eligible, we're just running the groups right now. And we would love, love, love to have this gigantic waiting list that I'm sure we will have as we continue to get off the ground. But there's space right now where people can come in and change their lives.
Nice.
That's a wordy billboard. Nobody would catch that.
I didn't say how big the billboard was, so
that's true.
Yeah.
It covered the skyline.
Yeah. No, thank you for that, and great, good news to anyone in Houston. Absolutely, go check it out. And is there anything else that I haven't asked you wish you could have shared today?
No, the few things that I want to make sure I mentioned are, whether or not you're in Houston, please go to our website. We have a lot of information about the Bergen treatment. If you're a clinician who's interested, we want to train more clinicians in the States and elsewhere. Cool. To do this. So please, please go to the website, HoustonOCDProgram.org. If anybody, Houston or not, has any questions, please just email me. cbrandt@HoustonOCD.com, cbrandt, HoustonOCD.com, or .org, sorry, let's duolink it. I'd be happy to answer any questions and think through things with people. So those are some of the things I wanted to mention. And then if I had one more thing about the treatment to mention, it's that we ask for a lot of feedback from the people that are going through the groups about the treatment and about their lives right when they're done, and about their lives the weeks and months afterwards as we're doing follow-ups. And every single one of them is telling us that this has changed their life. And I think everybody deserves to get rid of their OCD and have their life back.
Absolutely.
So please give me a call.
Cool.
We'll see if we can make it work.
Excellent. Well, thank you for your time, Chad. I appreciate it, and for explaining the Bergen method in more detail.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
So there you have it. I hope you found this episode useful and insightful. And if you get time, please leave a review on iTunes. If the podcast has helped you in any way, I greatly appreciate it, and it helps me reach more people. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It's not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.